The Guardian.
It's Football Weekly. Today, Confederations Cup. It's over for another 4 years. A sad day here at Football Weekly, but we console ourselves with a little post-tournament analysis and a hearty salute to the Germans. Like job applications to Uber, you write them off at your peril. We'll have that, plus a few final post-season thoughts on this Football Weekly finale. Well, that noise, listeners, is quite literally all the wild celebrations following the climax of this year's Confederations Cup. And as the dust settles around us, I'm sat here with Ian McIntosh and James Horncastle. James, you were saying, we're here on a Sunday night doing a show about football. Madness. Madness. But as we look back over this weekend, this 1-0 win over Chile, and also the 1-0 win on Friday night against Spain, you have to say, what a weekend it's been for Germany.
Yeah, you have to say that, Jimbo. And again, I'd say again tonight, particularly, wasn't maybe the most convincing German performance. I think Chile will be very upset to have lost in the manner that they did, considering the goal. Poor Diaz. He must be in bits for that terrible turn, which played in Timo Werner and then Lars Stindl. But complete dominance from the Germans. And again, both their B teams coming through. You look at the players that Germany could have had at the Confederations Cup. Neuer, Hummels, Hövedes, Boateng, Kudira, Kroos, Özil, Gomez, Schürrle, Reus, Müller, Gundogan.
I mean, I could go on.
Not bad, is it?
That's pretty impressive. Yeah. Play that game then. How many England players would get into this Confederations Cup team?
apparently our nutritionist is very, very good, right at the top of his game.
Seriously, but I mean, Harry Kane would get in there, wouldn't he?
In the Confederations Cup team?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Ooh, bad team of it. Yeah, well, yes, Harry Kane would get in that team.
Might be a couple on the bench, maybe.
So, but Germany, world champions, yeah. Confederations Cup champions, under-21 European champions, looking good for next summer back in Russia, Ian. Although you dug out a little bit of perspective for us in the shape of the last Confederations Cup final.
Yes, the last Confederations Cup, which was lots and lots of fun, was won quite spectacularly by Brazil with a 3-0 victory over Spain in the final. Two of those goals were scored by one Fred. Remember him? They were his fourth and fifth goal in that tournament, and I'm sure I wasn't the only person to have watched that final and gone, Brazil are dead certs for the 2014 World Cup now. So we maybe shouldn't read that much into a post-season tournament of limited importance. But that said, Germany are basically immune to all but like an extinction-level event injury crisis.
Well, pretty much the entire nation out skipping around in fountains at the moment celebrating this. It must have been a tense watch, though, that final, because Chile had all sorts of chances. 20 shots they had, I think, to Germany's 7. And at the start of the game and at the end of it, that desperate assault that Alexis and co. launched.
Oh, it took about 15 minutes for Germany to wake up. Chile just came at them straight from the first whistle. And they couldn't get anything going. They kept giving the ball away in the middle under Chile's press. They didn't have any kind of out ball. They were just twatting it over the halfway line and hoping that there'd be a short amount of time before it came back at them. Generally about 3 seconds. And then, as James said, it's that hideous moment of titting about on the ball by Diaz that lets Germany in. And after that, it's very, very difficult for Chile to get back in. Very difficult because they kept hitting everything over the bar.
And hitting every German player as well.
Yeah, almost sort of gradually losing their temper with the whole thing. I think, in fairness, they were very fortunate to play the last half hour with 11 men. I have no idea how anyone can watch the footage of Yara's elbow on Timo Werner and not conclude that only is it a red card, it's a 5-match ban.
You think Yara should have marched, yeah? should have got his marching orders, perhaps.
Yeah. I just think that Timo Werner's probably lucky, considering what Yara's done in the past to people he doesn't particularly like.
What are you referring to?
Yeah? Elbow in the face might be better than
a finger up the bum.
That's the one.
That's the one, yeah.
I was looking for the diplomatic way of putting it. You decided not to.
Hey, if you like stats and you like Chile, you'll love this. It's a stat about Chile. It's from Johnny Blaine, who's good with numbers. He says, Chile have not scored following this Confederations Cup final, in a major international final for 530 minutes since, in fact, the 1979 Copa America final second leg. That's extraordinary. I mean, it's not that they haven't won finals, but they just haven't scored goals in them.
No. And this is the thing, I think I mentioned a few pods ago that because they've been playing consecutive summers, they'd be maybe tired, but it's, yeah, they obviously kept wanting these Copa Americas in extra time and then on penalties, so they're used to it.
All right. Overall, then, this tournament, which kind of crept up on us unaware, we were discussing the fact that it just seemed a bigger deal in Brazil 4 years ago. This one, looking back, a lot of the more pessimistic predictions about it have proved, thankfully, rather unfounded. What's been the successes and what have been the low points of it, do you think?
The success is that there hasn't been any of the stuff that was predicted. There, to my knowledge anyway, haven't been any incidents of sort of mass crowd violence outside the stadium.
Because there hasn't really been a mass crowd.
Yeah, quite possibly. It might be different next time. But everyone seems to have been well looked after. The reporters who are out there are saying, you know, at the stations, there's English language signs, there's volunteers there to help everybody. Everyone's being very friendly. There was a fantastic story in the Observer today about a taxi driver who picked up a Chilean journalist and took him from the airport into the city, which was a ride that should cost the equivalent of 20 quid. And the taxi driver managed to charge him 650 quid, which when that story came out, the Russian authorities managed to track down the taxi driver, who, after a short conversation with the Russian authorities, decided to give all the money back and offer to drive aforementioned journalist around Russia for the rest of the tournament at his own expense.
How awkward would that be?
God, it'd be horrible, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You wouldn't know what to talk to him about.
No.
Simple misunderstanding.
So, yeah, the obviously a great deal of effort has gone on the charm offensive, and it seems to have gone well.
All right.
I count that as a positive.
Would the negative be James VAR?
Yeah, I think VAR, again, in this game we saw with Hadda, I don't know how that wasn't a sending off. And also I think more generally speaking, the timing of these decisions certainly hasn't been as swift as it was made out. Sometimes I think taking as long as 2 or 3 minutes to get a decision. Those decisions were right. I think in the long run, that's what it's there for. But I think some wrinkles that need ironing out ahead of the World Cup. But of course, this is the only opportunity they've got in an international tournament to do that. Obviously, in Italy and Germany, they'll be able to be doing this when it's taken online next season. And I think that'll be important for the team in place, which I think is run by Busacca, who's an Italian. So I think they'll be monitoring both what happens in both those leagues very carefully.
I think I'd like to see some limit on the amount of appeals,
like
with cricket, maybe just one half or
just
two.
Just throw a flag in.
Yeah.
Well, Busacca is saying that there were 35 incidents reviewed in 12 matches in the group stages. 6 game-changing decisions were made, along with another 29 major incidents that were reviewed. And then it wasn't used at all, apparently, in the semi-finals, despite the fact that there was one of the most clear opportunities possible when José Font seemed to take Francisco Silva down. But the referee didn't seem at all interested. And then again, it was used in this final and perplexingly seemed to result in the wrong decision. But there you go, teething problems. But I think the reality, and I know there'll be those who say, I told you so, but the reality of I just thought it would be smoother and not quite as much of a buzzkill as it's proven to be so far.
Yeah, it's really, really slow. And you're still reduced to this human error facet of how can you run over and elbow a bloke in the face and then watch that highlight 3 times and go, it's probably a yellow.
VAR, huh. What is it good for, Ian? That's the question.
Absolutely nothing, so far as I can see.
All right. Germany's under-21 side, we've mentioned, they have conquered the European Championship final in Poland. That was on Friday. We nailed this one with our prediction, didn't we, James?
Yeah.
Spain taking Germany apart there. Instead, a 1-0 win, Mitchell Weiss with a splendid header.
Oh, wonderful looping header.
Yeah.
Spain really had difficulty sort of imposing themselves in this game. That was the big surprise. I think Stefan Kuntz, who Rafa wasn't too impressed by when we spoke to him, I think made a quite impressive decision from the semi-finals onwards of dropping De Hood and playing kind of the more solid Habera in midfield. And yeah, Spain, I think in the first half against Germany in that final, no shots on target. Really didn't test Germany until I think Saul had a chance late on. And yeah, it was oddly not comfortable, but I think yeah, he certainly wouldn't begrudge Germany that win.
Now, if you've written us a letter, excitingly, you might get it read out now. In Ian, if you could just rustle around in your bulging bag of mail. There we go. This one's from young MZell. I have a question for the next podcast. Sandy. It looks like John Terry is going to play in the Championship next season, says young MZell. Do you think he's still got it from Aston Villa point of view? Do you think it's a good idea, bad idea, or how is the idea? He's 36.
I think it's a fantastic idea, because whatever opinion you have on him as a man outside of football, as a central defender, his influence on a team is as profound as I've seen in the Premier League era. When you watch him in real life, you can see the communication going on with the rest of the back four, the way he's pulling everyone into position. He doesn't let anyone's focus slip for a moment. And if there's any club that could do with something like that, it's Aston Villa. He will...
You're saying Gabby at Bung Lahore.
I think a few things probably won't happen anymore. He will be superb.
How many matches of this lengthy Championship season do you think Terry will reasonably expect to play, though?
Well, he might not make all 46, but his stamina's not that bad. It wasn't like his legs were giving out last season. He wasn't being picked because they didn't fancy him in that position. He's never really had that much pace anyway. So if he avoids injuries, I think he'll be all right.
Bruce, he'll just have to avoid playing a back three.
Yes. And I would fully expect Villa to go up.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a big shout.
Well, they've spent a lot of money. They've got a very good squad. They've got a manager who's won promotion 3 times for the Championship, maybe even 4, in Steve Bruce. He's a great judge of a player. I think they'd be my favourites to go up. Right. They're certainly my favourites to go up now, I think.
Have you got any other bold predictions?
Well, I'm on a bit of a roll because I had Germany to beat Chile in this confederation.
Did you?
I was the only one in the
that
room
is
in the last podcast.
That is a bold prediction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bucking the trend and convention. Middlesbrough as well. Gary Monk, they'll go up.
Right. Interesting. Well, I tell you what, since you've got your forecasting hat on, have a bang on this one, you and James. This is from Paul at UNRCD. If you had to buy one player for each of the top 6 teams to improve them, who would you suggest? Be an interesting question as well. If you had to buy one player for each of the top 6 teams to really wreck them, as a footballer, who would you suggest? But let's go with Paul's suggestion. Yeah. Okay, so, well, James, you lead us off then, because you've actually thought about this.
Yes,
okay.
Did.
Top of the table, then Chelsea. Who would you buy? Who do they need?
Chelsea, I would go... I mean, I think, to be honest, Leonardo Bonucci would be a great signing for them.
Bonucci?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Conte shares your opinion.
Yes, he definitely does. So it's maybe not the most outlandish opinion from me. But
why would he be so great for them?
Bonucci, because he's experienced, but he's not old. He's still only 30, which I think is a good age for a defender. And again, sort of brilliance as being the playmaker who's not a midfield player. You know, he can step into midfield as a defender, play some wonderful passes, and really build the play. So I think he would be a magnificent signing. Although I think of the Juventus players, he's probably the least likely to join Chelsea this year. I think Alexandro is the other one. Who would, if they need a left-sided wing-back or full-back, again, would be an ideal signing for them.
Juve have just... they've agreed terms with Danilo, no? Although they've yet to agree...
Danilo would be replacing Dani Alves on the right side. Hmm. And they believe, or they would like to think, that because Alexandro and Danilo were teammates at Porto and... both Brazilians got on famously, that would convince Alexandro to stay. But we'll have to see. I think whether they can actually match what Chelsea are offering to pay him, I think that is probably a bigger factor in whether Alexandro will stay at Juventus or not.
Okay, all right. Do you have a player that would make Chelsea just that little bit better, Ian?
I think the fullbacks, where it needs to be strengthened, are a cheeky bid for Hector Bellerin.
Oh.
If they can poach him away with a massive wage increase... Or, continuing pursuing Lukaku. I don't think you can go too far wrong with that.
Some people do wonder how far wrong that could go because they suggest that he might not be suited to their brand of football.
Yeah, I think, you know, it'd bring certainly a little extra. There's a, you know, so much strength. His movement is so intelligent. He's such a prolific goal scorer. I don't know where it would go wrong, really. I'm a big fan of Lukaku.
Right.
And plus, he's got a kind of clear affiliation to the club. He wants to be there and he wants to do well there.
Movement, though, I thought that was something that was regarded as a bit of an issue for him, that he doesn't make as many moves. He doesn't find as much space.
Which is why I'd probably prefer for that position, because, again, it's looked like they're going to have to upgrade there after Conte's text to Diego Costa would be someone like Andrea Belotti. I think would, again.
But how much would that cost them?
Again, but I think if you're going to pay that much for Lukaku, you're probably in the same ballpark for Belotti. So 100 million euro, probably a little bit more than Romelu. But I think, again, someone who does move a hell of a lot kind of really embodies that Antonio Conte kind of eat grass, kind of cover every blade kind of philosophy. And, you know, has prolific. I know people think he's a one-season wonder, but I think if you look, this goes back 18 months rather than just 1 year. So I'd say, yeah, Belotti.
I've never had a problem with Lukaku's movement. It's his first touch that's always been the issue. But if he can get over that, I think he's got everything else. You don't get many people scoring that many goals.
By
certainly
that
not. Yeah, certainly not at Everton.
Well, here let's have some other names then. Man City, who do you think?
James already mentioned him, Alexandro.
Okay.
You got Alves on the right and Alexandro on the left.
Boom.
Fullbacks again for City was their weakest point.
James?
If I've got the sort of Abu Dhabi bottomless pit of money, I'm going for David Alaba for the other side. He can also play everywhere. Maybe Thiago Alcantara as well.
All right, yeah. Well, that'd be nice. Spurs?
Spurs, it's difficult to know where to improve this team. I think, it's backup. It's kind of make up for the poor transfer window that they had last summer, because I think both the kind of upgrades that they thought they were bringing in for, you know, sort of Harry Kane's backup striker, Vincent Janssen, hasn't really paid off. Likewise with Moussa Sissoko. So better kind of fallback options.
I've got one.
Go on.
Well, Crystal Palace and West Ham are fighting over him now, but I think he'd do a job at Spurs. Kelechi Iheanacho of City.
Yeah.
City don't want him. I think he's an absolutely class act. And you've got him at a good age, a nice position where you can have him coming off the bench, playing in cup games, get more football than he would at City, and at, you know, effectively the same level.
Mm-hmm. Very tasty, very tasty. Liverpool, Man United and Arsenal are the other top six teams.
Yes.
Man United, Ian.
Morata probably.
That's going to happen.
Tough one. God knows. But yeah, they need a replacement for Zlatan,
right.
And he's nothing like him at all. But he does score goals.
Yeah.
Have you got a Man United prospect?
I did. And I left my piece of paper.
Okay, we'll move on while you're thinking about that. Arsenal. Can you remember your Arsenal one, James?
Yes. It was to replace Wenger, but so that's not signing. No, I think. I'm not too enamoured by Lacazette, to be honest. And this does look like they are going to get Lacazette. I would, for me, I would just go all out, just pay everything for Kylian Mbappe. Just so, you know, I think it would be fantastic if they could both sign him, smash the world transfer record, and then just kind of obliterate any kind of, disillusion about Wenger. All the other stereotypes about Wenger not spending, even though they spend on Ozil, Sanchez, blah, blah, blah.
Your doubts about Lacazette are down to what? His somewhat streaky scoring or what?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, he scored 20-plus goals in four straight seasons, but at the same time...
He does have...
Yeah, I agree. And I also think he's not too... I really don't think he's too much of an upgrade on Giroud. Didier Deschamps certainly doesn't think so. Deschamps is always picking Giroud ahead of Lacazette. Only brought in Lacazette into the squad for, I think, their qualifier and friendly in the internationals after the end of the season because he was giving Benzema a rest because Benzema had been at the Champions League final. So, yeah.
But also the way that Giroud offers Arsenal a clear second option when he comes on when it's been, say, Sanchez playing as a false nine. Can Lacazette do that?
I think there'd be greater diversity in having a couple of strikers if you have Giroud and, say, Mbappe.
Okay.
Then him and Lacazette.
I'd probably avoid the striker issue altogether and look at the midfield where Arsenal are essentially a lot of three-star hotels. They're all right, you know, but... I'd want maybe have a look at Renato Sanchez. If it's not working out for him in Bavaria.
Yeah.
Get him over to London.
Or Matuidi.
Or Matuidi, like
right.
Yeah.
What is the word on Sanchez? Because it was a much heralded move, followed by a lot of silence.
Yeah, didn't get much game time. Didn't seem too happy when he was there. All the spark seemed to go out of him. Just looked like a move that didn't work at all.
He's still very young, though. What is he, 20, 21?
Yeah, he's hardly anything, isn't he? Mm. So, yeah, there's a second chance for him. Get him into London.
He'd be a very exciting addition to the Arsenal squad.
He certainly would.
Wow.
It's the same with Kingsley Coman there, who, after having a very good season under Guardiola, again, didn't have a particularly promising second one under Ancelotti. And, you know, you're talking about players at who could come in and do a job at Spurs. You know, I think sort of that right side where they really missed Lamella last year. Hopefully he'll be back fit like a new signing. But Coman could have been quite good there on that right-hand side as well.
Mm. What about Liverpool then?
Van Dijk. Right. And if we're dealing with bottomless pits of money, which we're almost certainly not, Donnarumma.
What's the latest on the Donnarumma situation, James?
Well, it looks like there'll be a meeting this week. I think they had hoped to be in a room together already, but that hasn't happened. I think because Mr. Ryler is trying to, again, persuade the Donnarummas, not just Gigio, but all his family, that perhaps his strategy is the best one to follow. But I think the smart money is that he will sign a new contract. It just depends on what terms.
Strange situation with Liverpool goalies, though, because Jurgen Klopp's recalled Danny Ward from Huddersfield, which would suggest that he's going to have a part to play. But, of course, there's Simon Mignolet, who's signed a fairly long contract quite recently, and Karius, who only turned up last season anyway. So you assume that someone's going to be on the move there.
And equally, is their goalkeeping situation a little bit like Arsenal's hotels around the Central Station district? They're all reasonable, but none of them truly the place
you
want to stay in.
You go back over Liverpool's record over the past 6 or 7 years. In fact, I don't think they've had a season where they've conceded fewer goals than they've played games since Rafa Benitez's last disastrous season. That was the last time it happened.
It is very much a transfer window that's probably being defined by goalkeepers, because we've seen Pickford go to Everton, we've seen Edison go to City, we've seen all the Donnarumma and De Gea before that speculation. And I think Ian's right, that is still an area where Liverpool can improve, and I'd probably suggest someone like Skorupski as a good option. Did very well at Empoli and in Serie A this year. Again, another player that Roma will probably sell.
With all of those exciting players on board, it's going to be pretty hard to beat any of those teams. Who have you got a good feeling about for next year? Who's going to miss out on the top four, Ian? Have you thought about this already?
I haven't thought about who's going to miss out, but I have thought about who might break in.
Right, and who's that going to be?
I think Everton.
Wow.
I think Everton were not that far off last season, and now look at them. They've had the best transfer window so far.
Just remind me, who came in?
Upgraded the goalkeeper with Jordan Pickford. They've got David Klaassen in the midfield, who looks a bit of a talent. And now, just before we came on, they've signed Sandro off Malaga. I mean, that's the spine of a new team getting laid down there.
Right. And if Lukaku goes, how much does that influence your thinking?
Well, if Lukaku goes, obviously it's bad, but he's going to fetch somewhere between 50 and 70 million on top of quite a big pile of money already. Everton will pretty much be, we've got all the money, who do we want?
Right, okay. Well, I think that would be a tremendously exciting development.
I think it'd be a wonderful thing.
What do you think, James? Is there a team out there that you've got
an underdog team like Manchester City? Mm. I think City have had, with Everton, the best transfer window so far.
Okay.
Without a doubt. I think a second year of Pep. They've got rid. Think of the players that they released as well. I think he's really making this his own team now. So I think it'll be the year of City.
Okay. In Italy, where potentially the summer's transfers might leave us with a quite weakened or certainly radically altered Juventus lineup. Are we going to finally see somebody else win the Serie A title?
Perhaps. I think Napoli at the moment they've hardly done anything, but what they've done, contrast to last year, is keep this team together. It's a very exciting team. Tied Mertens and Insigne down to long-term contracts, but I think the team everyone's really excited about is Milan, because they've made more moves than I think anyone around Europe at the moment, and they keep adding players. Calhanoglu signed today for 20 million. And we haven't seen him for 6 months with Bayer Leverkusen because of that ban that he was serving, Yeah, someone who's caught everybody's attention because of some of the free kicks he scored. So I think everyone wants to see Milan do well again. And next year there'll be 4 Champions League places in Serie A. So I think we could reasonably expect at least one of the Milan clubs to be back in the Champions League from the 2018-19 season.
Well, it'll all be getting underway again before you can say Football Manager, the Arsenal project, which is how you're going to be whiling away your real footballless hours over the summer. Is that right, Ian?
Yes, absolutely. Clattering through on the set pieces.
Will there be regular updates?
There will be. Probably 2 or 3 a week. Oh. So we try and spank through.
OK, you're now Arsenal 2016-2017, is that right?
2017-2018 now.
All right. Yeah. Were you into the future?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I've dispatched Danny Welbeck, Olivier Giroud, Mesut Ozil. They've all gone.
Also, Arsene Wenger.
Arsene Wenger's my director of football. Oh. Yeah, we have a nice relationship. I let him do all the scouting and stuff.
Bingo. Yeah, all right, James, you got anything special for this summer?
I'm just doing all my prep for when EFS returns, James. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, about that. yeah. So, well, anyway, the football will be returning very soon. So look out for our return just as soon as young men in shorts start hoofing balls round fields. We'll be there to talk about it. In the meantime, have a really splendid summer, listeners. We've enjoyed all your contributions and the fact that you're actually sat there listening to the thing. So many thanks for that. This final Football Weekly of the season has been with Ian McIntosh. Thanks, Ian.
Thank you.
James Horncastle.
Cheers, James.
And, of course, the podcast master himself, Ben Green, who will be giving regular updates on the wonderful world of wrestling via his Parts Unknown podcast. And, of course, if you are looking for a little bit of podcasting magic to get you through summer, there's the Truth of Movies podcast. You know, worse things could happen to you than listen to that. But that's it for this edition. So hope you've had a splendid time over this season and we'll catch up with you again soon. Bye-bye for now.
The Guardian.